And we're talking now about improving the health system of Australia, which may require looking at the disparities in socioeconomic factors between ordinary people first. The differences in the living circumstances of many Australians gives a clear indication of those who are not living long, healthy lives and those that are. Fran Baum is Foundation Director of the Southgate Institute for Health, Society and Equity, and she joins us now to talk about improving living conditions for Australians. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, how are you, Sam?
I'm going quite well, Fran. And what socioeconomic factors are currently affecting the health standards of Australians?
Well, I mean, I think there's good evidence that when you get economic hard times, that affects health in all sorts of ways. But I guess what my research is interested in is the kind of health gradient whereby, depending on where you live, what kind of job you have, and those sorts of factors, really determines how long you live and whether you get sick or not in the first place.
And how much does location play into these?
Well, I mean, it does. I mean, I think you're in Sydney, aren't you? So if you live in Fairfield, you're about twice as likely to die before you're 74 as people who live in Woollahra. So it has a real effect. And, you know, the infant death rate is much higher in Fairfield, and that's common across a lot of our cities, that there are areas which are much more disadvantaged than others. And it's not only kind of like the people at the bottom and then the people at the top. Right the way in between, there's a gradient. So if you're in the middle, you're less likely to live as long as those at the top, and you're more likely to get sick from a whole variety of things.
And so when thinking about addressing these sort of issues, does it start with the government's or individuals' choices?
Well, the thing is, we all like to think we're completely independent individuals, but in fact, we're very heavily shaped by the environments we live in. So it really, I think the evidence suggests when you look around the world at the societies that are healthiest, that it's been because we've had good governments who have governed to promote health and well-being. And in the past, that's happened in Australia, you know, so we've had good supply of housing, we've had tobacco control legislation, we've dramatically reduced the road toll by a whole range of policies, we've ensured that we've got a safe food supply, and so on. So there's a lot, you know, good governments are absolutely essential to promoting health and well-being.
So, Fran, how does Australia's socioeconomic, you know, dependency compare to the world's at large?
Well, I mean, in terms of life expectancy, we do very well. We're up there. I think Japan leads the league table, and we're not very far behind. So we're doing well. But, you know, when we look at the inequities, if we look at Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians, then, of course, we know there's a gap of about 11 years. If we compare one suburb with another suburb, then we can see that if you're on a high as opposed to a low income, the gap can be something like 6 years of life. So there are inequities, and it affects us right from being children, the rate at which babies die, right through the life cycle to how long we in the end live. So while we're doing well, we shouldn't be complacent. And, you know, I think there's some of the issues that are being raised in Australia now might have health threats for the future.
And if you're just joining me, I'm speaking to Fran Baum from the Southgate Institute for Health, Society and Equity. And Fran,
I should just say that we're at Flinders University.
At Flinders University, in Adelaide.
In Adelaide,
yes.
Yep.
And Fran, with this sort of these health issues you're saying that may become threats, is there anything happening at the moment on a governmental level that is set to try and tackle these issues from a socioeconomic standpoint? Or,
well, I think it would be good if we had a sort of overarching look at government to say, well, how does each department affect health and well-being? So, you know, we know, for instance, that investing in early childhood is a best buy, and a US presidential report found if you give early learning initiatives, then for every dollar you spend, you get about $8.6 back in terms of benefits to society. So that's kind of a no-brainer, and I think we could be a lot more systematic in the provision of good publicly funded childcare options that provide lots of learning. And of course, that learning, if a family is poor and they don't have many resources, going to a really good early learning centre is likely to have more impact on that poorer family than on a family that does have a lot of resources and is richer. So that would be fantastic. Similarly, in urban planning, you know, we can make our suburbs more social, because being social, there's lots of evidence that if you're connected, if you live in a convivial suburb, that's good for your health. And also, if it feels safe, if you feel you can walk around, then that means, you know, if it's an exercise-friendly place, then that's also good. And, you know, similarly at workplaces, work can be a big source of stress for people. So if we can create workplaces that are fair, that people enjoy working, that they feel that they're getting chances, then that will be good for our health too. So, you know, there's a whole lot of ways in which we can look across the board and say, are we doing everything to maximize health and welfare? Because if we get that right, then downstream we're going to save money on the health services, which, as you know, is a big issue for governments, how much we're spending on health. But if we put the upfront investment in keeping people healthy, then that's going to really help downstream.
So moving forward, are we likely to be seeing these sort of approaches and discussions, or are we seeing them now or not?
Well, I think we're seeing them now. I mean, the other big issue is there's evidence now that how equal a society is. So, you know, if there's a small gap between the rich and the poor, that's good for everybody's health. You get a better average life expectancy. So, you know, I think these debates about should we have negative gearing, should we reduce the amount of superannuation supplement that high-income earners get, if we enact some of those measures and we make things more equal, then that's actually also going to be good for our health. So I think some of those debates are good, certainly. I think, you know, whenever we talk about a tax change now, and I think this is entering into the public discourse, we should say, is that tax change going to be equitable? Is it fair? Is it going to reduce the gap between the best off and the least off? Or is it going to increase that gap? And from a health point of view, you want to reduce that gap because that's good for health overall. Oh, so I think those are the sorts of questions. And I think the state where I live, South Australia, has a project that that's picked up on the European Union and the World Health Organization called Health in All Policies, where they do try and put a health lens across the activities of different government departments. So I think that's very positive, and I think we could look at doing that federally. So, and there's also been a fantastic World Health Organization project called Healthy Cities that some Australian cities have taken part in, both in the past and currently. And that's really taking a whole city and saying, well, how can we improve health across the city? So there are a number of mechanisms that we can look at to improve health.